It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
In the many, many, many years I've been doing this program, it's almost 35 now, just longer than most of you have been married, I've met a lot of really exciting, entertaining people, from United States presidents to actors, actresses, you know all that. But I love our military veterans the most. And somebody I got very close with for years was a fellow by the name of Colonel David Hackworth, who a lot of you remember Hack, a lot of you don't, but he wrote a couple of great books and, you know, had a lot to say about Vietnam that wasn't real popular. He was part of General Westmoreland's stable of studs. It kind of went south on a particular TV program one day, but he stood up for himself, and he stood up for what he thought was right and wrong. And that's what I like about individuals that want to come from the military and do more with their lives, like this gentleman. His name is Colonel Buzz Patterson, and I was not aware of this man until just the other day, when my dear friend Katie Grimes up at the California Globe was telling me about a particular congressional race of his in 2020 that looks like it was ripped off of him by the folks over at Twitter. What a surprise, now that Twitter's so much in the news. He wanted to come out of the military. He wanted to service in a capacity in the House of Representatives. He worked for the Clinton administration carrying the nuclear football. I mean, that's a very big deal. 20 years in the military, best-selling author, very well-known speaker. He joins us now on KMJ to talk about the election that didn't quite go his way and what I hear is a center-right district, and he should have won. Colonel, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for sharing a little time with us today. I appreciate it very much.
Hey, Ray, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And we got a lot to talk about. I do want to say, though, Beckwith was one of my heroes, too. In fact, some of his early books were instrumental in forming my perception of what was happening in the military, the Pentagon, and with politics in Washington, D.C. So thank you very much for having me.
Ah, my pleasure. My pleasure. So let's hear a little bit about you first. You spent 20 years in the Air Force, I believe it is. Tell me a little bit about your career, if you would, please.
Yes. Thanks, Ray. So I was a pilot in the Air Force for 20 years, saw tours of duty literally all over the globe, 69 countries in my 20 years. Combat, Persian Gulf, Bosnia, Somalia, Rwanda, places like that. And then from 1996 to 1998, I was asked to come to Washington, D.C. to be interviewed by the Clinton White House, ironically, to be the military aid, the Air Force military aid, and carry the nuclear football. So for those 2 years, I lived in the Clinton White House. I went everywhere that he went, vacations, Air Force One, Marine One, keeping that black satchel, the nuclear football, always by the president's side. So I was that guy for 2 years. Saw a lot. Wrote a book about it when I retired from the Air Force and was legally able to do so in 2001. And wrote a book called Dereliction of Duty, which talked about my perspective as an Air Force officer, a military officer, and being that close to the commander in chief, and the things that I saw that troubled me in terms of who he had elected for a second time to be our commander in chief. And so I wrote a book about it. And I've been talking about how politics in this country adversely affects our military for a long time, which led me to my congressional run up in Sacramento.
Run was in a district that Katie tells me was center right. I mean, it was pretty much a kind of a conservative district, correct? Or was it? Well, you tell us.
Yeah, it's center right. Ami Bera has been the incumbent in that district. Prior to Ami Bera, who's a Democrat, that district had been controlled by Republicans for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. Ami, when they redrew the district back in 2010, Ami was able to defeat Dan Lundgren, who was the previous Republican.
Oh, that district. Okay.
Yeah. So that's the Lundgren. You know, so the Doug Osee, Dan Lundgren district, Sheriff Scott Jones ran.
Yes, yes.
So that's the one I ran in, and we were looking really good. And we were polling. We were polling a little bit ahead at one point, like a couple months out. And then Twitter, during the COVID situation, Ray, we had to rely a lot more on social media and a lot less on walking door to door and meeting people because of the COVID restrictions. And we were bending a lot of rules and doing events and things, but we really had to rely on social media. And then Twitter pulled the rug out from underneath us about 30 days prior to the election of November 2020. And we went from feeling pretty comfortable about success to losing to Bera.
Now, when you say they pulled the rug out, what do you think they did?
Well, they shut us down, right? I mean, they literally, Twitter literally took our profile. So we were making probably, I mean, most of our campaign statements, most of our campaign events, we were carrying live on Twitter.
Yeah.
We were doing our fundraising requests and through Twitter. And then 34 days prior to the election, Twitter took us down completely. We didn't have any presence. We didn't have any access. They just shut us down. We appealed, and I think Katie talks about it in her Globe article.
She does.
You know, we kept appealing, and we couldn't. You know, I was the one doing most of the calling personally, saying, you know, this is kind of an infringement on our ability to run this campaign. I finally got a human being after a couple of weeks of this, Ray, and she was helpful. She was the congressional liaison for Twitter, and she got our account pulled back up. But she pulled it back a day after the actual general election. So that was the story that Katie was telling fully for the first time. I really haven't talked about it publicly since then, but that's 100 honest to God truth. And we feel like we had it taken away from us. And we think, I mean, Barra didn't even hardly campaign, right?
That's what I hear. No campaign whatsoever.
He didn't feel like he had the need to. I think he knew the fix was in. And I was out there, you know, pounding the events and pounding the stump, and he just didn't do a damn thing and ended up beating us. And I think it was because the social media thing collapsed, and he knew that he could count on that.
Okay, aside from, you know, what you saw pulling the campaign, what else did they do? You couldn't fundraise. You couldn't do a lot of things that you would normally be able to do. And this was about a month before the election, and they didn't bring you back until the day after the election. Looks pretty fishy to me.
That's 100% true. And also in conjunction with that, Ray, they also hacked our campaign email account and tried to get into our campaign finances. And we were able to stop the financial part from happening, but they did hack into our email. Our email was shut down also for the exact same amount of days. So the same day that Twitter went down, our email went down, our campaign email went down. I was able to use other email sources, but you know, you've got your donor lists and your supporter lists and your volunteer lists all on one single server, which is what we had, which is probably a mistake in retrospect. But so we lost the email in conjunction with the Twitter, and basically we were just rendered null and void and didn't really have a voice. And I didn't contest it at the time. I didn't want to be that kind of guy that that would confront Twitter or Mr. Barra. You know, he won according to the books, and we respect that. We're not going to run this time against him, Ray. I'm going to keep my powder dry. We're going to see things, how things shake out. We're also part of the Election Integrity Project here in California.
That's what I hear.
Taking California to court, not to overturn anything. This is nothing. This is not about trying to change the results of 2020. But it is, I think, most Californians would agree in. We need more transparency into how the machines work, how the mail-in ballots work, who's doing the signature authorizations. Mm-hmm. And California has been very reticent to come forward with that information. A couple of counties are playing ball with this, but most of California is not, including Sacramento County, which is where I ran.
Why are you choosing not to run again?
Just it was because they redrew the lines again, Ray, and it was going to be me running up against a couple other Republican friends of mine. And I just really, in the heart of my heart of hearts, I know what goes into a campaign, and I know that people put a lot of time and a lot of money into a particular candidate, and I just couldn't, in all conscious, you know, good conscience, run against people like Kevin Kiley and Sheriff Jones and Tamika Hamilton, people that I know and like, and they're friends of mine. I just couldn't see a bunch of Republicans slicing each other up and having two Democrats go forward to the general, which I think is probably going to happen. So
Ronald Reagan's old rule that, you know, Republicans shall not slice up another Republican or whatever it was. Yeah, I hear you on that one big time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the California Republican Party needs a lot of work, right? I think we can all agree with that. But, you know, I didn't think it was going to be productive for me to go after fellow conservatives and fellow you know, candidates who are also going to be raising money from the same people. I thought it was, you know, just not, you know, from a military guy perspective and officer perspective, looking back, you know, I just didn't think it was right for me to ask people for money, knowing that it was going to be going up against running against people who had the same beliefs in many ways.
All right. We're going to take a break here pretty soon. If any of you have any questions for the Colonel, 490-5858, 800-776-5858. And that latter number is from all over California, all over the country, if you're listening online. Do you have a book coming? I know you've written some great books. One of them I've read. Do you have a book coming out on this particular incident, though, sir?
I just started one, Ray. We're working on it. I mean, literally a couple months ago, we started putting it together. I've got a lot to say. I'm hitting the speaking trail, hoping to hit as many Republican groups as I possibly can between now and November. So I kind of feel like, you know, serving your country takes a lot of different roles. Running for office was one, and now I get to hopefully be a cheerleader on the sidelines and do some more damage in terms of taking the Republican Party to task, and also taking the state of California to task. And of course, the RNC was endorsing us, which was endorsing my campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they saw what was going to happen with the redistricting, I just said, you know, guys, I don't think this is feasible in terms of you guys getting behind one candidate and having the other ones just fade away. So,
yeah, that's right.
But yeah, we got a book in the works, most definitely.
We'll take a breather here. We'll come right back with you and me and Colonel Buzz Patterson. A joy to have him on today here at News Talk 580, 105.9 KMJ, and the Ray Appleton Radio Program. Stay put.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJnow.com.
It's free.
Joining us is Colonel Buzz Patterson, one-time candidate for Congress, District 7, up in the Sacramento area. And looks like Twitter got a little too carried away with his account and sort of helped the other guy win in a race that the other guy shouldn't have won, to put it to you simply. And to clarify, and this is something, Buzz, that we talked about with Katie yesterday, you're not blaming the Democrat for being responsible for this. You're kind of looking at Twitter and maybe the DNC for helping him out a little bit, right? You're not putting the finger on the candidate.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. But I do think maybe, Ray, that he had some knowledge that something like that might take place.
Sure.
But I don't think he was behind it. I think that there's a much greater effort at the big tech firms to suppress. I had the same issues. Now, Facebook never shut me down completely, but they did certainly, they throttled us pretty good as well.
Really?
So there was also that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
so
right.
It was kind of a coordinated thing. You know, and also, I mean, before we get to the calls, if you don't mind, the same thing is happening right now, Ray. I represent an organization called STARS. It's an organization of military members, former and current, who are really alarmed at what's happening with the woke culture in the Pentagon and the CRT being taught in military units. And I created an account on Twitter for STARS, and we were taken down. We had over 600 followers in the first 24 hours, and they took us down and suspended us indefinitely. And the only post we ever put, Ray, just one post, was our mission statement, which was to fight racism and radicalism in the military. And they took us down. I'm still working with Twitter to get that site back up and running.
Wow. To think anybody would do that in this day and age. What do you think about, I think I know the answer to this one, but Elon Musk buying Twitter, $44 billion, was that a good thing for the social media platform? Or you fill in the blank there, sir.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great thing. Now, I've got my fingers crossed that Elon will do a lot of things he's talking about doing, but I think somebody had to break through the high-tech, the big tech cabal that exists in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I think Elon Musk is exactly the guy to do it, because he's the only guy that actually can afford to do it. And the fact that he's got Jack Dorsey now kind of backing him up a little bit, the former guy from Twitter, I think this is all good. And I'll tell you, it's kind of fun, kind of ironic, but on my personal Twitter page that we've gotten back, I gained about 15,000 followers in the first 48 hours after Elon announced his decision to buy Twitter, because I think they're changing the algorithms now that seek out and suppress conservatives. And I think that that's the direct result of Elon being interested, and I hope it goes through.
I do too. Let's grab another phone call very quickly. David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Is that me?
That's you.
Oh, great. Yeah. A couple of different things. Being a military guy, he's probably well aware that since the year 2006, the Pentagon has acknowledged that global warming is real. And that was because the Pentagon and the Navy had to protect the Arctic because there was so much melted ice up there that there was now a Northwest Passage. And so ships could go from across the northern part of Canada all the way over to Alaska. So does your candidate believe and acknowledge global warming exists?
Yeah, I think that's an awesome question. And I'll say I do acknowledge that, although I don't acknowledge it to the fact, as President Biden said last week, that he wants to turn all military vehicles and equipment into 100% green energy by 2030. Now, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, every airplane we fly, every tank we drive right now is carbon-based in terms of the fuel. And as a pilot of 35 years, I also flew commercially for Delta Airlines after leaving the Air Force after 20 years. I'm not flying an electric airplane anytime soon. And I don't think most of our fighter pilots are going to want to do that either. I mean, we have a phenomenal military inventory of equipment and people, and we can be environmentally conscious without letting it destroy our capability, our logistics, and our lethality going forward. So, yes, I acknowledge the climate change. I also think that we can get too far out in front of this thing and really kind of damage and destruct our military capability if we're not careful.
Earlier, we got, well, I tell you what time have we got here? I want to make sure I don't go too long here. We were talking about the individual that won this race, probably without doing a lot of campaigning. Isn't that person in receipt of an in-kind gift by what Twitter did for them and the DNC maybe did for them? Are you going to pursue that? Are you going to look into that possibly, you know, whether the person was at fault or not, that this was somebody helping out illegally on a campaign, was it not?
Yes, sir, it was. And we are definitely looking into that. It was an in-kind contribution. We're trying to figure out how do you quantify how much he would have received with his opponent's social media and email capability being taken down completely. So basically, we were robbed of fundraising mailers, and we were also robbed of having social media. So we're trying to figure out how we quantify exactly what that impact and what that damage was, right? I mean, it could be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. It could be a million or two. So we don't know exactly how to complain to the FEC just yet until we can quantify exactly what we believe the claim to be.
That was my question. Yeah, you handled that rather well. What are you going to do it? How are you going to call it? How are you going to prove it? I mean, there's a lot of work there that's got to be done before you can pursue something like that.
Well, the FEC is aware. In fact, I've been talking about them with some other situations and other subjects as well. But the FEC is aware, and their question, again, is, okay, how do we... How do we figure that out? A, how do we actually pin it on Twitter? Who do we pin it on? And B, that was, you know, Mr. Barra aware of it, and did he participate? And C, if so, if all of that is true, yeah, how do you put a dollar figure on it? And that's going to be the most difficult part. And I think people at Twitter and Facebook, they understand that it's going to be almost impossible to prove damage until more of this stuff comes out.
And Twitter admitted this, right? They did say it was your account was hacked, correct?
They did. Yes. Like I said, I finally got through to a human being after a couple of weeks, and she was very helpful. And she was like, she worked congressional issues for Twitter, and they did confess it was hacked. They did help me get it back up and running. But again, the damage was done. And I've been up and running since then. So that particular account is up and running since then. Although I will tell you something, I know you got to run here, right? But something anecdotally is that, you know, as soon as Biden was inaugurated, I lost 35,000 followers on my Twitter account overnight. So there's a very concerted effort on the part of big tech to suppress conservative voices. And that's why I am hopeful and optimistic that Mr. Musk will come in and start exposing some of this stuff. And the conservative voices will be allowed to go unfettered on social media.
Colonel, this has been a joy. I hope to talk to you in the future. Please let us know how this progresses, and we'll check in from time to time on your end and see what's happening, if you don't mind, sir.
Man, not at all. I'd love that. So anytime you guys want me on, let me know, and I'll give you an update with what's going on with the FEC going forward.
Let's do this. Do you have obviously you do. Do you have a public presence, a Facebook page, all of that, how people can learn more and communicate with you if they so desire?
Yes, sir. So the aforementioned Twitter account, which is up and running right now and very, very healthy, is at Buzz Patterson, capital B, capital C, two Z's. So at Buzz Patterson. Facebook is at Buzz Patterson. I'm on Instagram at Buzz for Congress is my Instagram handle, is Buzz for Congress. And I'm also just recently on Truth Social. So I'm on the new at Truth Social at Buzz. I'm hedging all the bets. Right? I'm making sure that if Twitter goes down again, I've got other lines in the water. So all those places they can find me in my books. The most notably, Dereliction of Duty is my book that was about the Clinton administration, the Clinton years. Is available on Amazon. It was a bestseller in the New York Times for quite a while, and it's still doing pretty well. So people can reach out to me on all those platforms, and I'll get back to them immediately.
All right, sir. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you down the road, and appreciate your service and everything. Take care, my friend.
Yes, sir. God bless, Ray. Thanks, man.
Back at you. Bye-bye. Colonel Buzz Patterson on KMJ. Interesting story about how his 2020 election looks like it was just had the rug pulled out underneath him by Twitter. You know, you heard the story. It's an amazing one. It's just a little too much for coincidences, you know? Just a little too much.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
Ray Appleton. Now.
Right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
Gotta tell you, that was a great little outing with Colonel Buzz Patterson. There are people that you can just put on the phone you immediately like, you know, and he was one of them, without a doubt. And there's no doubt we'll be talking to him again about his case of the election that wasn't. Speaking of mysteries, a body inside of a barrel was found over the weekend in a newly exposed bottom of Nevada's Lake Mead as the drought depletes, you know, one of the largest reservoirs in the country. I think this is a biggie. And officials predicted that the discovery could just be the first of a number of grim finds. Ray Spencer, Vegas Police Department, said, I would say there's a very good chance as the water level drops, we're going to find additional human remains. Why does he say that? I mean, hello, what does he know? The lake's level has dropped so much that the uppermost water intake at the drought-stricken Lake Mead has become, you know, very visible for the first time last week in ages. And the reservoir on the Colorado River behind the Hoover Dam has become so depleted that Las Vegas is now pumping water from deeper within Lake Mead, which also stretches into Arizona. Personal items found inside the barrel indicated the person died more than 40 years ago in the 1980s. All right. He declined to discuss the cause of death. He declined to discuss and describe the items found, saying that there's some things found there that don't necessarily make sense. The police plan to reach out to experts at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, to analyze when the barrel started eroding. Okay, that works too. And the Clark County Coroner's Office will try to determine the person's identity. Boaters spotted the barrel Sunday afternoon. Oh, man. National Park Service rangers searched an area near the Lake Hemingway Harbor, and they found the barrel containing all of these skeletal remains. So Lake Mead and Lake Powell upstream are the largest human-made reservoirs in the USA. And it's a part of a system that provides water to more than 40 million people and tribes and agriculture and industry in Arizona. This is creeping me out. And it's in Colorado and Colorado, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Utah, Wyoming, and across the southern border to Mexico. But what cracked me up about this story, he says that this particular investigator says there's a good chance that when the water level drops a little bit more, they're going to find additional human remains. Based upon what? Just one find? It's like, does he know that there was a big mafia hit there or something like that in the 80s and a lot of stuff were dumped into that lake? That would be creepy. Hey, look, everybody, a barrel. Hey, maybe there's treasure inside and there's a body. I wouldn't know what to do, you know? I have to say, I've never found anything strange like that before. Speaking of finding things strange, I did something that I never ever do. I was on one of these websites the other day for old coins, and I saw $90 and you get a bag of old coins guaranteed going back to at least 1880 or not 1870 up to present day. And in the bag, there's expected to be, not in everyone's bag, but somebody's going to have some gold. Somebody's going to have some silver. So I said, what the hell? Paid $90. Got it. And I was shocked, man. I didn't get any gold, but I got a lot of silver. I mean, those of you who know coins, there was a ton of, not a ton, but a lot of barber dimes, barber nickels, barber quarters, standing Liberty quarters, more than $90 worth. I scored. So now I'm like, gee, do I buy another one? You know, the other one will probably just be full of Lincoln pennies and that's it. This had some Indian head pennies in it. It had some Mercury dimes, Buffalo nickels. I mean, a load for $90. I don't know that much about coins, but I do buy a lot of silver. And I thought, I'll just throw it in that pile in the safe and maybe live happily ever after. So I never do things like that because I always get burned. Always get burned. But I think this time I did okay. Oh, and I found zinc pennies. Those are kind of rare. Aren't those from the war when they changed the pennies over to zinc for a while so they used the copper for weapons? I found 3 zinc pennies. So I'm acting like a kid in the candy store. Look what I found. But gotta have a hobby, right? Something else I wanted to say about Patterson, I forgot. I just thought, oh, I need to mention that. Now I can't remember. Odd situation with the USS George Washington. After a series of deaths and suicides amongst the crew of the George Washington, this is an aircraft carrier, by the way, that's dry docked in Virginia, and it's been there for maintenance since 2017. The Navy is going to start allowing these sailors to jump off the ship. So apparently they've been confined to this ship since then. Really? Within the last year, 7 sailors assigned to the ship have died, and they're most likely suicides. And for, I don't know who's in charge, but they thought for a moment that maybe these people are killing themselves because they've been confined to the ship since 2017. I would think that would probably have something to do with it, not to be funny or, you know, silly about it, but how could you do that, leave people on a ship for that long and see that, you know, that there are suicides happening and not put 2 and 2 together and come up with 4, you know? Very weird. But we'll see. That's a developing story. It just popped the other day, and I was going to mention it, and I forgot. But I think that would do it. I mean, if you're stuck 4 years on a ship, 4 years, whatever it's been since 2017. Yeah, I mean, that would drive me a little batty, too, I would think. Right? Then I think about people who go up in space and that are up there in the space station forever, you know? How do they make it? I spent 2 nights one time on the USS Ranger when we were doing the Doolittle thing back in 92, I guess it was. And that totally freaked me out. Totally freaked me out. So I can't imagine somebody else doing longer, you know? Final break of the program. If you wish to discuss anything that we've tackled today, tackle it one more time, 490-5858 and 800-776-5858. We'll be right back.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
I have not said anything about Ukraine or Russia today of any significant note, only because it just depresses the hell out of me. But a couple of things. No, I mean, really, I had to stop talking about it for a while. I mean, I had one tough week a couple of weeks ago. Ukraine has released some video yesterday purportedly showing 2 Russian patrol boats being blown to smithereens in the Black Sea. Russia doesn't deny. The clip begins with an aerial view of one of these Raptor-class boats, okay, in the water. And then the ship bursts into a, you can find it online, it's there, a giant fireball. And then it's hard to tell really what's going on, but it's a mess. It's a mess. The second boat, which was on the move, suffers an identical fate. So these two Russian Raptors were destroyed at daybreak. I'm reading the release from yesterday. Today, near Snake Island, so says General Valery, the commander-in-chief of Ukraine's military on a Facebook posting. Russia's military has not yet commented on these videos. They've not said anything to the effect one way or the other. They're not denying either. The reported destruction comes a few weeks after Russia's Moskva warship sunk in the Black Sea. Now, that's Moscow. That's what that means. And that was the lead ship of the Black Sea fleet. That was the one that everybody saluted. I mean, this was the legendary ship of Russia, and it's gone. The Moskva was roughly about 60 miles south of Odessa at the time of the explosion when it hit and just went kaboom. Yeah. And Moscow claims that the ship sank after, you've been hearing this for a couple of months now, after a fire broke loose caused by some sort of an ammunition blast. But I think the fact of the matter is that they got it. They got it. They took care of it. They, being the Ukrainians, they did a good job. Good job. And I love it. There are rumors swirling about with Vladimir Putin, supposedly in a big battle with cancer. You heard this story? It's a new report with the Russian strongman that would temporarily hand the power over to the hardliner, Nikolai Patrushev, if his health sidelines him. This is something we don't want. You think that Putin is bad. This guy, Patrushev. The claims have not been independently verified. Moscow roundly denies that Putin is in ill health. But who is the man who will be at the helm in the Kremlin if Putin takes a sick day? It's this guy, Nikolai Patrushev. He's the secretary of the Russian Security Council. That's an influential body that answers directly to Putin and issues guidance on military and all kinds of things. Dangerous, dangerous man. Like Putin, Patrushev is a career Russian intelligence officer, first with the Soviet KGB, later with the Russian FSB. And this is according to the English language newspaper called the Moscow Times. The paper likened Patrushev's role to that of an American national security advisor. Okay, that sounds nice and tame and easy. But if you know anything about the guy, he's bad news. In a 2017 profile, Politico called Patrushev a Kremlin hawk, known for his fiery nationalism, his conspiratorial worldview, extensive espionage experiments, and experience. He's done both. Patrushev joined the KGB as a young man in 74. After meeting Putin in the 1990s, Patrushev was made the head of the Russian Domestic Intelligence Service, the FSB. That's a post he's occupied for a decade. And then he became part of Putin's Security Council in 08. So there, another baddie at the top. The ex-spy has been reportedly part of Putin's cadre of advisors during the entire annex of the Crimea from Ukraine in 2014, was involved in that war, that little brief come and get it, here you go, kaboom. I don't know how else to put it. The ex-spy reportedly was among Putin's closest friends and has been just a hardcore mainline advisor to him since the war began. I don't know what else to say. The guy's dangerous. So hopefully these stories about Putin having cancer are all BS. I hope. One more phone call, then we got to pull the plug. Lee, you're on KMJ. Hi.
Yeah, how you doing, Ray?
Good.
Hey, listen, that whole thing about the Twitter and the election and what happened there, I think that was really widespread in 2020. I don't want to talk about the Trump thing. You know, people say it wasn't stolen, it was stolen, whatever.
Yeah.
But my question is, how do we put this genie back in the bottle that the left and the Democrats, I'll go ahead and say the D word, have discovered about how to win elections? I think in the last one we saw here, you know, they're able to do this mail-in ballot thing, universal ballot. I keep hearing different numbers on Biden's how many votes he got. I heard, 81,000. Now I'm hearing 81 million. Now I'm hearing 90 million. How does a man like Biden, who didn't even campaign, end up with the most votes in the elections in the United States?
I know what you're saying. Let me respond. Biden aside, forgetting him per se as a candidate, your first question is, how do we put this genie back in the bottle of Democrats learning how to win elections through the micro manipulation of social media? I think is a dynamite question. And the only way that we're going to be doing something like this is with the exposure through people like Elon Musk, who have enough scratch to buy the thing and expose it for what it is. And I'm thinking he's going to be doing that. And that will put the fear of God into everybody else running one of these things, that they better watch it or the boogeyman's going to get them. Other than that, I don't know what else to say, but I think that is a great place to start. That's where we need to start. And I think that's an excellent question you raise, and I thank you for that. Have a good evening. I mean, that's the big one. How do we stop them from continuing to do this? If this story about Buzz Patterson is true, and I believe it is, I mean, there's just too much there that says, yep, this really happened, then we have a major, major problem. And maybe this is what happened in the 2020 election overall. Don't know. But we have to get to that point. We have to find out. Skip and Phillip are on the way at KMJ. My thanks to the guy that you're going to hear next for joining us earlier in the day to talk about Roe versus Wade. That's Michael Germanuel Jr. He's coming up. Good for me as I start choking to death. Good timing, Ray. He's coming up right now on KMJ. And just remember one thing, please. I am Ray Appleton. And you're not.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.